Blog Talk Radio.
Oh, that's great. That sounds terrific. Thank you.
Of one of his ex-employers. After finding and documenting a noose and Confederate flag hanging on the work line, racist graffiti written on the company's restroom walls that contained the N-word, and he found that black employees were being paid less than white employees for doing the exact same job. We're going to speak with Mr. Cush in just a minute. But before we do, let me give you some of the recent stats coming out of the EEOC. found that 2010, they say, was a record year for EEOC discrimination retaliation complaints. This article was dated January 12th. And for those of you all who don't know, the EEOC stands for Equal Employment Opportunity Commission. And what we found is that the EEOC announced on January 11th that a record number of employment discrimination complaints were filed with the agency in fiscal year 2010, which ended September 30th. As a result of investigations, mediation, pretrial settlements, and litigations, the agencies obtained $404 million for victims of discrimination, the highest amount ever. For the first time, the EEOC also announced the number of complaints filed for discriminatory retaliation surpassed the number filed for race discrimination. A total of 36,258 retaliation complaints were filed under all the non-discrimination statutes the EEOC enforces last year. Overall, the EEOC received 99,922 workplace discrimination complaints in 2010. That's 7.1% more than in year 2009. Complaints of discrimination based on race had topped the list of charges filed with the EEOC since the agency's inception in 1965. In 2010, the EEOC filed 250 discrimination, harassment, and retaliation lawsuits against private sector employers and state and local government employers. It resulted in 104,999 complaints through mediation, conciliation, and pretrial settlement. Regarding federal employers, the EEOC resolved 7,210 complaints through hearings, securing $63 million in relief for federal employees who were victims of discrimination. It also handled 4,600 appeals involving discrimination against federal employees, up 9.5% from 2009. Those are some big numbers, y'all. I hope y'all are paying attention. And then also, and this is the last of it, the number of complaints the EEOC received of discrimination based on virtually all the major categories increased in 2010 over 2009. They say that they had 29,029 complaints of sexual harassment. They had 1,044 that were filed against equal pay. They had complaints of 35,890 for race discrimination, 11,340 for national origin discrimination, 3,790 for religious discrimination, 25,165 were complaints were filed against Americans with disabilities, 23,264 was for age discrimination, and lastly, 30,989 alleged some form of harassment. So that makes me think, as some of the people listening today, are you victims of some type of harassment on your job? Well, we're going to find out because Mr. Cush is here with us today, and he's going to break it all down. He's going to explain his complaint with his ex-employer, and he's also going to give some tips for you to know whether or not you're being a victim of some form of discrimination on your job. But first, we'd like to remind you that the views and opinions of our guests do not necessarily reflect that of Center Stage or our host. Ladies and gentlemen, let me introduce to you Mr. Khufu M.G. Cush. Good afternoon, Mr. Cush. How are you?
Yes, fine. I'll care. Can you hear me?
Huh?
Can you hear me?
I can hear you very well. For those who are not familiar with your case, and we cannot, by the way, tell you who the name of Mr. Cush's employer, ex-employer is, unfortunately, because Mr. Cush was put under a gag order once they settled. But he can tell us the things that occurred that led up to the EEOC complaint and some other things, but we just cannot mention the name of the employer. Mr. Cush, can you tell us what happened? You know, I mentioned there was a noose hanging, there was a Confederate flag hanging in your workplace. Can you tell us what happened that led up to you filing the EEOC complaint?
Yes, I mean, we had, you know, we had people working our section, whereas myself, who were on the job for 2 years and who were expected to receive a good wage for the job because the job paid quite a bit of money, or what we consider is quite a bit. I paid like $23.50 an hour. And so, you know, of course, you kind of work every day if you're expecting that type of pay to be issued after you lay on, you know, for your good work. Well, we had situations where, like myself, I was there about a year and a half on that particular job. I already been at the company for about 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
And so, but I was on this one particular job for about a year and a half.
Mm-hmm.
And the job didn't start out for $20 an hour, but it topped out like $23.50.
Mm-hmm.
So that was fine. I thought I was there about a year and a half. We had a white fellow came in and they asked me to train him, you know, to do my same job, which I did. Well, about 8 months later, the white fella, he threw a pay stub in the trash. And so I just decided to get it out and look at it. And so he had just started coming 8 months before that. And so at the time, I was making $14.02. And I looked at his stub, and here was $18.22. And so that kind of raised some concerns there, you know. And then I had another situation where we had a fellow who was in our department. They came in. I think he and the white fellow came in through one other department about 5 years before that. They was promoted to the area where we was at. And the job started out at $14.85, was supposed to, the job they were going to be doing over this particular area where we was at. And topped out at $23.50 as well. And so 5 years occurred, and the white fellow was making $23.50 an hour. He got the complete pay for the job. But the black guy was making only $13 an hour. And so, you know, remember, the job starts out at $14.85. And so the question was asked, well, was this guy here a regular attendee? Did he have a bad attendance record? Did he have, you know, a bad work record or what? And so it was discovered that neither one of these fellows, the white fellow or the black fellow, would show up for work. Both of them had bad attendance records. But it never stopped the employer from continuing to raise the pay scale of the white coworker.
Well, let me ask you this. Did the white employee come in with work experience related to what he was doing on that job?
Well, they both came out of another area where they was gophers, like, you know, like Kitty was. You know, when they first came in, they were just trying to work their way up.
Okay.
And they was like lawn boys. They worked on the lawn, and they was making like $8 an hour, both of them were, because they both told me the situation. And they was promoted to this other area but around the same time, and they was placed on a job that they told was supposed to start out at $14.85, which the white fellow used to buy at $14.85. And the black guys were still at $8 an hour. And so 5 years ago, and the white fellow was making $23.50. But the black fellow was doing the same job on night shift, the same identical job. Nothing, no more or less, the same job. She was making only $13 an hour. But the thing with this year, it was discovered also that the black employee's time card was, there was another job tried to put on his time card in order to keep him from receiving his rightful pay. And so when the EEOC looked at that, once we made him aware of this type of game it was using in order to keep the black worker from getting the full pay of the job.
Let's be clear. So you're saying that the two people were working the same job, but what they did to basically play with the paperwork was to put that the black person did a different job, so that therefore if they were ever caught, it was looking like they were doing two separate jobs.
That's correct.
Okay.
Well, they were actually doing the same identical job. I mean, the black fella had trained three other white employees within the 5 year period. He had trained three other white employees who they put the right title on the card. And they were making like $17.28, $18.30, $18.90. and this fellow here making $13 an hour. He hadn't even got the beginning pay of the job, which is $14.85. And so that was one of the things that got the employer in a bad situation. And, of course, you know, just having the blacks in the front office, and there were no blacks out on the floor. And so then we had a fellow who was making racist Confederate signs in the plant, right on the lockers. He was right on the bathroom walls. He as well as other employees were doing that, white employees and whatnot. But we're not sure if black employees participated or not. But the thing that got the company violated was that they failed to take effective immediate action in a timely manner. And that kind of something like that lingers on, and the employer doesn't make a no tolerance policy. I put that in place. It doesn't become the question of whether or not if it was put there or if it always had been in the plant like that. It becomes a factor of what did you do effectively to remedy the situation, and that is no tolerance. And
so as soon as they were made aware of it, just like if something spills in a grocery store, as soon as the grocer knows that spill is there, he immediately goes and cleans it up, because if it's there too long, somebody slips and falls on it, you know, he had adequate time to get it up. Is that what you're saying? So same with their employer. They had time to know that the graffiti was on the wall, and they did nothing to replace it or to clean it off.
That's correct. They didn't. They kept, at times they would come in and spray a little paint over certain things, but the issue with the gun is that you have to put a policy in place that's no tolerance for this type of behavior. And so they did not have anything that was no tolerance policy. Well, they said they did, but they didn't enforce that policy. And so once it was enforced upon employees, we never saw that again, but the company was already in violation of the law. Mm-hmm. You know, so that's, you know, that's what that is. Plus, you know, along with, you have Confederate boxes, locker boxes, and these things were being made out of company material.
Wow.
Company paint, you know, welding material, you know, stuff like I said. So you also had, like, you know, the hangman noose, which had been in the plant for quite some time, for 4 or 5 years. And the thing the plant was trying to push off was that a previous company who owned that facility 10 years before that noose was probably in the plant when they bought the plant. But that wasn't going to work either, because if you, say, for instance, you know, if you have a car and you have the car for 10 years and there's drugs in the car, in the back trunk, and you can stop by the police 10 years later and he says, well, you have a trunk full of drugs here, sir. Well, he says, well, sir, I just say, you know, I've been owning the car, I bought the car, maybe it was drugs there when I bought it. It's probably, you know, I don't sell the drugs. Well, if you own the car for 10 years and you didn't know there was drugs, then that's your drugs.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That's the whole thing with the company. They couldn't get out of the fact that noose. But it was just true that it was a previous owner's noose. Employees witnessed that the noose had been first seen on a young black man's table on the second shift, and they reported to a supervisor, and they briefly spoke on it and swept it under the rug. And that fellow, that was offered once the paperwork came out, he was offered an assistant supervisor job in order to stay quiet on the situation, not to tell EOC anything about it. But there was a witness, and the witness told it, who was at the guy's table when they discovered the noose.
Mm.
So, and, you know, they had to ask him questions about what the other guy would not say. But
so the noose had been around for how long?
Excuse me?
The noose had been around for how long?
About four or five years, according to employees who had been there before myself. They said they couldn't get a new plant because they tried to get one black male who was in that section. They tried to get him to say that it was he and three other white gentlemen working in that area, and the safety officer came through and asked him would he be willing to sign a paper saying that he did not see that noose over in the corner. And the black employee informed me that he told him that he could not do that because he had seen the noose over there in other areas of the plant, and that it has been there for quite some time.
Was the noose in clear view of anybody who worked there?
Yes, they would. I guess the fellows in that area, they would play with it. They would put it up a while, and they would take it down a while. Because when I first saw the noose, another fellow actually showed me the noose. He said, "I want to show you someone the way out the plant today." And I said, "Okay." And I was always, you know, pouring still my soul possession and stuff. And I said, I want to show you something. So we walked through the way on the way out, and he glanced his eyes back. It's just for me to glance my eyes over toward the corner. I glanced my eyes over, and I was just shocked. I had never even seen anything like that. I just terrorized me. I had never seen an actual real noose that was tied, up like a noose, and it was there hanging. And so that was a shock. And so I didn't do anything about it. About 6 months passed, and I was thinking about that and a lot of other things that were going on in the plant. No black supervisors, no blacks were getting in the front office. And every time blacks come in, they had a certain job place where they wanted to put them up on a hill. And on the whites used to call it Monkey Hill. But what the other black guys told me, they tried to call it Monkey Hill. They tried to put blacks up there and stuff. And so that was discriminatory and racist in their nature as well. Call it that. Mm. And so I thought about it for about 6 months, and I was getting done pretty bad back at myself. Threats of termination and stuff, or all types of things. And I knew I would show up every day and I could do the job. And so, but when I asked for my money, I'd be threatened with termination.
And so, you asked for a raise?
Excuse me?
When you were asking for a raise?
Yes, when it came time for raise time, I would ask for my raise. And, my supervisor, would always threaten to terminate me. You know, say, I'll fire you instead of talking about a raise. I'm not giving you a raise. You don't deserve a raise. You messed up this or you messed up something. I said, well, you know, I'm the best one you have back there according to your lead, man. I mean, I'm not perfect, but I know how to do the job, and I work all the overtime, so I'm going to make some mistakes. But overall, your production is moving around pretty fast according to what's been told to me. And everything looking good. You know, overall situation is looking good. And so, and he's been required on some of his white employees. He let them slide. Sometimes bring up things like that, but he just, he wanted to undermine us because of the way he had done the black fella. The black fella had not accepted the way they did him before I got back there. I don't think they would have tried us that way. Once they seen the black fella, never said anything about his raises, and they, you know, they kept him at $13 an hour when he was supposed to have started at $14.85, and they were still getting the white fella his raises, his black fella never said a word. I think they pretty much signed us up. They said, well, they know we can do all these blacks that way. You know, they're not soft enough to handle their own business as men and ass, you know, represent themselves for us trying to get a raise. So we just overlook them, and we'll just play the game on the rest of them. I mean, all of them fall for the same thing, more likely. So that's basically where I took it, that since this fella here had allowed them to manipulate him that way, then they thought they had signed all of us up. But that was the case.
How many employees does this company have?
The company has, at that one facility, 700 employees, and we had 600 whites, roughly, according to the EOC investigation, there was roughly 600 whites and 100 blacks. So that shows you that as human resources was responsible for some of the mistreatment of going on against blacks as well.
Now, wasn't it true that your company did not have a human resources at that plant, a human resource office at that plant?
No, they had a human resource office. They hired directly from the company. They didn't hire through an employment agency or anything. But the lady had sole power to hire, and that was the problem. She was racially biased.
Wow.
And it took me like a year and a half to get in the door, and I had to get around her. But she would often get hired through someone else. She wouldn't hire me. I called her, you know, they thought you'd have. Then once I met her in person, I realized why I couldn't get through the door.
Wow.
Because she had this, you know, some white people have this racial thing about them that they just cannot hide. And we, the blacks, have seen white people like that. You know, we have seen whites who just can't even hide their discrimination towards blacks. You know, their racial phobia, whatever they have here.
So you've been there for a while, and you've seen what's going on, and so you decide you're going to do what?
I decided I was going to investigate the plant since I was previously a president of a field rights organization, and co-founder one. I said, okay, and I was, you know, pretty much a student of history. And I said, okay, I can. I even had some of the guys coming to me and say, man, we need to do something about this. Stuff going on out here. There's just a thing about something going on. Things going on out here. Okay, fellas. Okay, we'll do something. I'll investigate. So I started, you know, my investigation, started jotting down things. And then once I wrote down enough things, I figured I had enough information to bring a charge. I remember that they had all these violations of graffiti in the plant. That was the main thing that hit me. And I said, well, okay, since they have all these graffiti, it'll tie in with everything else that's being said about the government. And it's all, you know, just going to let the government know that this is, you know, it's a real situation we have going on here.
Mm-hmm.
And so I went to proceed to come in early to take pictures. And I took pictures of the bathroom stalls, the bathroom walls, pictures of the locker boxes that's in the wide opening, big boxes. They tried to draw them in and clad it on them and all that type of stuff. Where it's in the wide opening, the box is so big as a car looks like. You can't just pack it in there. That wasn't going to work. The government knew that wasn't going to work. And we had a noose. I remember that fella had showed me a noose about 6 months before that. And I said, let me go back to this area and see if these guys still have this noose over here. And, you know, and there it was. And so I took a picture of it. I took several pictures of it. And so the camera I had was salty. And so I went to the dental sales. Everything was black.
Wow.
I said, well, I'll be dog. I'm going to have to get back in there and do it again. And so I had to go back and take pictures all over again. And so after that, once the initial reports come out, first of all, you have to make a complaint through the company.
Mm-hmm.
So I complained to court through a hotline about the situation, but I never told corporate about the racial graffiti and things that was on the walls, this type of stuff here.
Mm.
I tried to save it for the charge because I figured they were going to, since there were no black people around those, and no blacks in the front office. If I told them anything about that, how I complained about that, then they would probably let me go.
Mm-hmm.
Think I would let me go before I even got into the process. So I only told them about my pay and things like that. That's what I told corporate about.
Mm-hmm.
And so once I made a complaint with corporate, they said, well, you need to call back and check on the complaint in like 3 weeks. So they gave me a date. I called back and it was some apology. It wasn't even legitimate, come to find out.
Mm-hmm.
And so I had to wait to call them back to try to check on the complaint before I could file the complaint with the EOC. Mm-hmm. So I hooked up with a fellow, the Urban chapter of the NWCP out of Dallas. He said, well, I know the EOC building is here in Dallas on Commerce Street. And so he said, well, you come up here and I'll show you where it's at and whatnot. So we went in and we filed the charge. Well, they had intake officers who were in training that day on Thursday. And so you have to meet with the intake officer in order for your charge to be considered as being filed. Now, they stamped it and gave me a copy of the charge, but it wasn't officially on docket as a charge until you meet with an intake officer. So I'm going to have to come back that next day. Well, by that time, my friend, the NWCP in Dallas, she had contacted the Justice Department, Carmelita Pope, because they had some racist things about President Obama. So anytime there's some racist thing mentioned about the president, then the Secret Service had to come in and investigate also.
And that was on the graffiti that was written on the wall in the bathroom?
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
Yes. Like F. Obama, Black A, you know, stuff like that. So, and like the only power you black monkey heifers have is what the white man gave you, of course. And the N-word written up there, those letters carved into it deep. And then we have things like, we don't need to stop the hate. We need to own some niggers. Own some men, excuse me.
Wow.
Ladies and gentlemen. So, yes, we had that type of stuff that was just boldly there, you know. And so, like I said, I made a company aware of only my concerns about my pay and wage discrimination and non-promotion. And so they shot that down. And so I decided to bring the whole charge before the EOC. Well, what happened so... the next day, instead of coming back to Dallas, I had to contact an attorney that same Thursday. I said, well, I'm in Dallas now, found a charge, and I'm going to come back tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
He said, well, you come down here. He said, we can file a charge right here in my office. And so people don't have to file a charge. They have an attorney to file right there in the office for them.
We're going to pause, Mr. Kush, right there. If you just tuned in, you are listening to the all-new KLAC's 98.9 The Talk. As we're bringing you center stage for today's topic, do I have a legitimate EEOC complaint? And Mr. Khufu M.G. Kush is with us today, and he is telling us, we're at the point where he's about to tell us what happened when he went in to file this EEOC complaint. Okay, and if you're on the phone lines and you have a question or a comment, we're going to ask you to hold them until the second hour because we want Mr. Kush to finish his story so that we can get a good understanding of what happened in his situation before we go into what's appropriate and what's not appropriate in the workplace for you to do if you have a situation such as the one that Mr. Kush dealt with. Okay, so you're in the office of who, Mr. Kush?
I'm in a what now, Carrie?
You were in the office of who at this point?
I'm in the office of my attorney, and he said he could find where. Well, I was in, at the a building in Dallas where the media, once my NAACP friend, the president of Dallas and the Urban Chapter, she wanted to talk with Channel 8. Well, he had talked to Channel 8, and they wanted the story first. The Gary mm-hmm. Reeves wanted the story first. So to stay with friends, I agreed to get them an interview. And so I waited on them. Oh, no, I left. I left Dallas because the attorney said, no, they're not going to media yet. Just let me get a chance to get on top of the case first. He's come to my office. That was quite another 200 miles away.
Mm-hmm.
Come to my office first and allow me to file the charges and then give me a week to get on top of the situation before you do an interview with the news people. So we did that. We told the news people that we couldn't do an interview with them until you know, the lawyer had conducted his a few things he needed to do to get on top of the case in about a week. So I gave him a week. And so then we came in and did Channel 8. And then Channel 12 came to town. Wanted to do a interview as well, so we gave Channel 12.
So the complaint had been filed by the time you were doing the media thing, right?
The charge had always been filed. I was basically had an attorney. And the charge was filed, and the attorney had got on top of the situation for letting the company know that he was representing me and
okay.
that he was not going to tolerate any type of retaliation.
Okay.
And then he said, well, no. So they were well understood. They were well understood in the company. Head counsel said that there would not be going to be any retaliation.
Okay.
And so, yeah, we just moved on from there. And what we did is we decided to. See, the company was kind of rough. They was kind of rough on discrimination. I mean, they was kind of full of stiff neck about overlooking the rights of blacks. They were real cavemen like that, you know, if you want to say that. They was very, very, they didn't want to give a black anything.
Mm.
And so I said, well, we got to handle these people here a little bit different. We got to handle them a little bit rougher than what we would normally handle a situation. We could have been quiet with the charge, but since they was very stiff-necked individuals out there, then we had to handle them a little bit different. And that's where the lawyer agreed that he would do the, he would sit back and do the law work.
Mm-hmm.
And since I was previously president of the Civil Rights Organization, that I was, you know, public relations director of that organization, I could just do the media stuff myself, and he would just handle all the law work. And so that gave me an opportunity to talk to him in the media.
So your attorney didn't have a problem with you going public with the story?
No, he didn't have a problem. He wasn't a media type of hype attorney.
Okay.
And so he said, well, might help us, may not help us, but if you have you want to play it, you can do that. I just handle the law aspect and you can handle that aspect.
Okay.
And so he and I kept the case to ourselves. He refused taking more clients. Well, we had another guy who wanted to came in from out of town to call me, him and another activist out of Dallas.
Mm-hmm.
And this guy here was from upstate, the attorney. And he called me and wanted to represent me. I said, well, I don't have an attorney. And he said, yeah, I'm like, so he's probably not going to be willing to work with you. And I said, I tell you what, I have a few other guys who would like to file a charge because they have same situations. And so they need an attorney.
Were they within your company?
Excuse me?
Were these other people that they were referring to, that they worked for the same company that you did?
Yeah, they work for the same company that I work for. They work in different departments.
Okay, gotcha. Mm-hmm.
So they wanted an attorney, and my attorney would not take their case. And so I told this guy that we still have some people who want to file a charge of discrimination as well. And so I just got him on the phone with them and whatnot, and so he took their case. And then about 6 or 7 other people joined. you know, his caseload. And then he had some people, those were the main charging parties. He had like 8 charging parties, main charging parties. Myself and 7 of his clients were the main charging parties. And there was one white guy who was a charging member who was retaliated against because he would not set up one of the other charging parties at the plant. And so he had an opportunity, being white, to be in the office in that area where they was talking about setting up this black guy because he was part of this charge process. And they know this white fellow was closest to him.
Mm.
And they joked and, you know, and were friendly all the time on the job. And so they wanted him to do it, you know, to bring a complaint against the black guy to try to kill his credibility on the case. And the fellow refused to do so.
Wow.
And so about 2 weeks later, the plant manager approached him, and he had never been in the plant manager's face ever. Mm-hmm. And asked him, did he go through with filing charge against a certain individual? He told him, no, he did not. He's not going to do that. The guy had not done anything wrong, and they're friends. He's not going to do that. And so a week later passed, and he had a little minor flaw in his job, and they fired him without question.
And that brings up another question. What was the work environment like?
When they did that, then she decided to bring a charge as well.
Wow.
Well, we had another white guy who was supervisor who was fired for some legitimacy. But his wife encouraged him to hit the white fellow and be a witness to discrimination. And so he became a witness for this other white fellow, and he was a supervisor there, he was. And so he became a witness for one of the plaintiffs. And so that kind of helped, you know, make the case stronger against the company, because now we have whites standing up saying the same thing they've been doing to blacks all along. And he had been told as a supervisor before to watch certain black individuals, you know, certain people and stuff.
Okay, at this point, what is the work environment like for you? I mean, you've gone public.
As it went on, though, of course, you know, this stuff here, it kind of dies out for a minute. The plant gets quiet. Though, you know, when the initial thing comes in the media, there's a lot of hype in the plant and a lot of stereos. You get a lot of bad looks when you walk through the plant. You get black guys, even black guys are scared to speak to you in the restroom or anything. They hear them, get out of the way. When you come in, they go the other way. And so they're going to fire him. They're going to fire him. They're going to get him. They're going to get him. And this type of stuff. So, at time lingered on, everyone's waiting on the decision to be made because the government normally makes a decision within 6 months because the charge has to be filed. Or am I getting ahead of you here?
No. I guess I'm trying to just understand. I'm trying to understand the environment because you're saying that your coworkers are treating
really?
You. But how is your supervisors treating you? Are you there, Mr. Gush? I think our board dropped Mr. Cush's call. He's going to have to dial back in. Our boards are full and they froze. This happened to us last week. Mr. Cush is going to have to call us back. For some reason, the boards froze. Mr. Khufu M.G. Cush is our guest, and he was telling us about how to file a legitimate EEOC complaint. Mr. Cush, are you back with us?
I got cut off.
At some kind of way, I saw the boards freeze, and when they do that, that happened last week. They completely froze, and sometimes it drops the call when it happens. Okay, so I was asking you before the call dropped, how were your supervisors treating you? You just gave us a glimpse as to how your fellow employees were treating you, but how were your supervisors treating you at this point? Were you getting a backlash at all from them?
The supervisors, they didn't want to cooperate they didn't want to give me any more money. They had already made the mind that they weren't going to give me no more money, and I had already heard they weren't trying to give me any more money. And so that's why I proceeded to just found them the best way I could and the roughest way I could with this EOC process.
Mm-hmm.
I gave them no slack.
Mm-hmm.
And if they did anything wrong, I was quick to write them up, you know, and I would turn it into a corporate or just you know, I dirty filed up.
Mm-hmm.
So I began, they made me kind of rash them because they was trying to play the money game with me. And as you know, it was all about the money. You know, they were playing the money game with my wage. And so then they got scared, so they wouldn't say anything around me.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't want to come back to them. Mm-hmm. And they we just worked every day. I kept professional all the time.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't insubordinate because I was still the employee.
Mm-hmm.
And I tried to make them feel that I was still an employee. I would not try to act like I was a supervisor or bug them or anything. I just would just do my job. I wasn't going to take them any bullcrap that was not company policy.
Mm-hmm.
And if it wasn't by company, if it wasn't company policy, I wasn't going to take it.
So you had how many days to file that EEOC complaint?
You have 300 days to file it, so over to EEOC.
Okay. This is Texas, y'all. Now, we don't know from state to state. You might have to check with your local EEOC office. But in Texas, you have 300 days to file.
That's correct.
Okay.
Some states have 180 days, but Texas has 300.
Okay, so you filed within the reason, within the time frame that you were supposed to, and then you said it took how long? I mean, how long do they typically take to get back with you?
Wait, now the 180 calendar day filing deadline is extended to 300 days. That's what it is. If a state or local agency enforces a state or local law that prohibits informed discrimination on the same basis,
mm-hmm.
the rules are slightly different for age discrimination charges.
Mm-hmm.
For age discrimination, the filing deadline is only extended to 300 days if there is a state law prohibiting age discrimination in employment and a state agency or authority enforcing that law. The deadline is not extended if only a local law prohibits age discrimination. So you don't have 180 days, but they say it is extended to 300 days if a state or local agency enforces a state or local law that prohibits employment discrimination.
Okay.
So best try to file within 180 days because, best try to file within 180 days. But sometimes you get away with 300 days.
Okay. Now, why, if they give you 300, do you need to file within the 180? I mean, I'm just asking.
Well, what they're saying is that you have state and local agency. Like, you have state agency, right?
Okay.
Okay, then you have local agency, like the company.
Okay.
If they enforce a state or local law,
right.
State law or local law that prohibits employment discrimination, then if they employ both of those laws, state law and local agency laws, then you have 300 days, to file a charge. And they have it posted at the work site.
Okay.
Whether or not there's just state law or it's a state and local agency like themselves that enforces this type of stuff.
Okay, so you file your complaint and you go into the media, and how long does it take them to respond back to your complaint? I mean, what you thought you would get an answer within what period of time, and when did they answer you?
You get a answer within, the government is going to notify the employer within 10 days
mm-hmm.
that a charge is filed against them,
mm-hmm.
okay? And so the government is supposed to give you an answer within 180 days, 6 months.
Okay.
That's what they're supposed to do. But sometimes it takes longer because due to the how much information they have obtained and how serious the charge may be, it takes them sometimes a lot longer. Because we had to wait another 6 months, actually. It took a year for them to rule on the case. But it's best not to go to the government and ask for a quick ruling because they would just issue you a right to sue letter, and they would just close your case with that office.
Okay,
so
now I'm going to ask Kush to repeat that. It typically, they get back with you within 180 days. They did not give Mr. Kush an answer for how long?
1 year.
1 year. So he's telling you that if they don't get back with you by the 180 days, do not push for them to get back with you, because you told me that means what? When the longer it takes typically means what?
It means that you really have a good charge, because they would normally dismiss it within a month, 3 weeks. They would just send you a right to sue letter. They don't dismiss it. Well, they do. That's basically what it is when they issue a right to sue letter. They're basically dismissing the charge because they're saying that they didn't find enough evidence to show that the employer probably violated the law.
Now,
so
you know what,
right,
when it sounds like, for those of us who lay people like me, a right to sue letter, you would typically think means that, wow, I got a better case. But when you get that right to sue letter, that's saying that the EEOC is not going to do it for you. You need to get you an attorney and do it yourself. Is that not correct?
That's correct. And you have to have you only have 9 days to file in federal court. So you have to, once you get that right to sue letter, It means that you better have an attorney already in place, and that you your attorney is prepared to file that suit against that company within 90 days. So do you lose? If not, you lose your right to sue on the federal guidelines.
Okay. So if they don't issue you a right to sue letter, which per Mr. Cush is not the greatest thing, you really want them to give you a ruling? Is that what you're saying?
You want that stamp. You want that determination stamp.
You want that determination letter.
Yes, that's what you're looking for, that determination letter. Because the right to sue letter is just saying that that the government is standing in the middle and that your attorney and the company attorney has to go to war in court, and whoever wins, it doesn't mean that you don't have a choice. It's just that the government didn't find enough evidence to show that they probably violated the law. And so, but your lawyer may feel, though, that there's enough evidence, enough information, he can use it and to try in a court of law. If he feels sure that he can win the case, he still can file a lawsuit on your behalf, and y'all take the court, and it'll be you and the company fighting.
Okay.
But now once the government issued the determination letter, the government saying that he found enough evidence to show that the employer probably violated the law.
Mm-hmm.
So he's going to violate them, and he's going to take sides. He's going to step to the right over there where you are. And so now it's 2-on-1, you and your attorney and this company over here sitting over here. Now, really, if you have a solid case, like nuisance and stuff like that, and enough evidence to show that they got racial graffiti and racial pornography and all that type of stuff in the plant, you really don't need an attorney. You don't have to have an attorney. Because they rule in your favor, the EEOC, that they are your attorneys. They basically override the attorneys anyway. The attorneys don't have anything really to do with this setback, because the government going to handle the whole process. The mediation, the conciliation process, and everything, and they're going to be trying to resolve the issue at a round table, a conciliation process.
Okay, so it's only two results that are going to come out of the EEOC findings. That's either that you have a right to sue or you're going to get a determination letter. The right to sue means, okay, you're on your own from here on in, get you an attorney, you have 90 days to do whatever you're going to do. The determination letter, if I'm understanding you correctly, means that the EEOC finds enough grounds to work with you in moving forward against your employer with whatever your complaint is.
That's correct. And also, they're going to issue a package to that employer called under Title 706, Pass B. When an employer is found to be violated the law, then the federal government, is by law has to put that company back in line with the federal laws. So they issue a package themselves. Some things the company is going to have to comply with. And they got to report to the government regularly, like 3 months and 6 months on update reports. But
and let's talk about when they issue a determination letter. When they issue a determination letter, that's pretty much saying that, what did you tell me the other day? They have found that your complaint is legitimate enough that it is going to affect others. What were those reasons that you said that they would issue a determination letter?
Yes, I was about to get to that. The only way the government will violate a company, because 96% of the time the government issues just a right to sue letter, less than 4% of the time they issue the determination letter. The only way they're going to issue a determination letter in a case is that they look at the seriousness of the violation according to their charter, what the legal issues are, and if whether or not other people would benefit from this lawsuit. If they don't fit those three categories, you're only going to get the right to sue letter. You're not going to get a determination letter. But they find those three things, like a nuisance, serious violation of federal laws. Since you got that in the plan, and you got, graffiti, they can argue against, graffiti. The company came, okay, and tried to say, well, those are war symbols and Confederate fighting the Union, all that type of stuff. But, you hear them trying to make it non-racial, but it's violation of company policy. Mm-hmm. It cannot be in a work setting like that there. But when you have stuff that's there that's in the plain view, nooses and writings on the wall that's lingered on for years, we know without a serious no-tolerance policy in place, then... And then plus, no blacks in the office. You got like 200 people in the office. Now I'm black. It doesn't show good, say that you're, equal employer opportunities. And another thing, hiring 600 white employees versus 100 black employees, that doesn't show that you're not violating the law. You know, no black supervisor on the floor. That doesn't, that adds to your stack.
Okay. So I agree. And I agree. So what happened, so it took them one full year for them to respond to your complaint. So what happened at that point? They tell you that what? They give you a determination letter and say what?
They give you a determination letter showing that the company was found to be violating civil rights laws or Title VII, 1964 Civil Rights Act law. And so the government issued a determination letter in this case. And they're going to a conciliation process. And the conciliatory process is a way to try to amicably resolve the case.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so they would be guiding the conciliatory process.
So kind of like a mediation kind of thing.
Correct. And the government issued a date, but they're on your side.
Okay.
You know, they're issuing this conciliation process when they have issued a determination, they're on your side.
Okay.
So, the conciliation process is basically they let the employer know we're going to try to conciliate this thing and we're going to run it, but we want you to show good faith in trying to resolve the issue through a settlement. If not, we're going to sue you.
Hmm.
They're going to sue you? I mean, you know, the government going to lead the suit. I say that they lead the charge. They filed the charge in federal court.
So I would think at this point, let me pause you right here. If you just tuned in, you're listening to the all-new KLHD's 98.9 The Talk, bringing you center stage for today's topic, Do I Have a Legitimate EEOC Complaint? We're speaking with Mr. Khufu M.G. Kush. He successfully filed an EEOC complaint against his ex-employer. He found a noose and a Confederate flag hanging in the workplace. There was racist graffiti containing the N-word written on the company's restroom walls, and he found that black employees were being paid lower wages than white employees were for doing the same job. So, Mr. Kush, you all get to the point where you're at the table for this conciliatory, what do you call it, conciliatory, whatever that
process,
word is.
Conciliatory process. That's what it is, conciliatory process.
Conciliatory process. And so what is happening at this point? Is this the point where everybody brings in their documentation and you say this is what I have and they say this is what I have and you put it all on the table? Is that what happens in this process?
No, that's not what happened in that process. At that time, once the government issued a determination letter, then it's basically once the government called for the conciliatory process and set a date, when you arrive there, you will be in one room and the employer will be in another room.
Yeah.
And the government will be, in this particular case here, we had three different rooms because we had my attorney and myself in one room and we had the other guys that was part of seven or two or three of them anyway, they brought there with their attorney and then they had the company in another room. And so the government, the company is not arguing about whether or not they violate the law no more. It's not about throwing mud anymore. That's already been done. The fight's been, you know, been fought. Everyone's been fighting for a year in the media and everything. And so all they talk about that day is punitive damages.
Wow.
Compensatory and punitive damages is what they talk about that day.
Mm. Okay.
And remedies,
so you all are sitting at the table, and your attorney is saying what he feels is fair for you, and then they're saying what they're willing to do. The company is saying what they're willing to do.
Yeah, the company has had a chance to go first for us trying to show their good faith of trying to resolve the problem compensatory wise and punitive wise. And so they'll give the government a number, and the government would bring it to both rooms and tell you what they're saying they would do. And so you look at it, and it may show good faith. Which that their first number showed good faith, according to the attorneys. But it wasn't near about enough to resolve the issue. And so you said that's not going to do it. That's not going to take care of it. And then of course, the government tells you the policy that the company has agreed to change this, change that, and post this year to make better practices for African-American employees by making sure that they, you know, get trained properly by the company, go ahead, some supervisors and training areas that wouldn't train blacks. You know, they had a school there, and the blacks was complaining, where's myself, that they wait blacks out.
Mm-hmm.
And it's because the blacks can do the job, learn the trade, that they didn't want them to learn it. And so what they had to do, they had to say, they had to change the guy who was over that area, they had to put a black guy over him to make sure that the black employees were being trained just as well as the white employees were being trained and given the same opportunity to advance in the company.
Okay, so at this point, this is where everybody kind of makes their demands as well in this process. So the government is telling the employer what they're going to demand that they do from this period on. Is that correct?
That gives the employer a chance to throw some things out there that they're going to try and, if they will implement and put on paper that they will implement in the company. And the government also issued a package indicating what else they have to do and what they what type of jurisdiction that the government has in order to overlook their shoulder for how many years. You know, after like 2 or 3 years, they're going to look over their shoulder. After that, they're going to make a report to them every 3 months and every 6 months, periodic reports.
Okay, so y'all in this process and all this is being done, what happens? I mean, what conclusion comes out of this meeting?
Well, you know, if you're very patient, like I was, it took from 9 o'clock in the morning to 12:20 at night to reach an agreement. The government closed at 5:30 in the evening, but the process was going so well, the debate was for his compensatory and punitive damages and the waiting amount to where the government said we better stay here. And then the company also said, well, they didn't want to rent any more hotels for their attorneys and everybody. And so the company of corporate people wanted them to resolve the issue that night. And so they kept raising the limits of what they could spend on trying to resolve the issue.
And so were you all able to come to a resolution that day?
Yes, because if not, then I mean the government will have to set another date, try it again, or the government can go ahead and decide, well, you know what, we're not even going to set another date. We're going to go ahead and file the suit.
Now, is that typical that the things could progress that quickly? I mean, I know that you'd waited a year, so I really shouldn't say quickly. But in that first conciliatory meeting, is it normal that everyone will reach a conclusion in that first meeting?
They have had to come back 2 or 3 times with different people, employers, and sit down and before they got a case resolved. When the company showed good faith, and then it was good, but the agreement just had not been met. But this particular case here, the company side, they didn't want any more advancement on my part because I stayed in the media on him. So they decided, well, he's still destroying our credibility instead of bad-mouthing us in the media and whatnot. And right now, of course, we were writing their vendors, too, who was doing business with them. We wrote like 12 vendors.
Wow.
Telling them they were dealing with a company that was practicing racial harassment, this type of thing here. So we kept bad-mouthing them.
Wow.
So they didn't want any more bad publicity.
Okay, so once you all come to this resolution, that first meeting, which is, wow, just impressive. So did you decide you're going to stay with that employer? Because I'm sure it wasn't going to be the best work environment for you. Did you decide to stay or did you decide to leave at that point? What did you decide?
Well, you basically, after you reach a certain number, when you pass certain figures, they want you gone. So it's a voluntary. You're going to have to voluntarily get yourself out of it. So
okay.
They're not letting you know they're forcing you out, but this is basically what they're doing too. So you got to be voluntarily get yourself out, resign, basically.
Okay. So you voluntarily resigned because they had reached your happy number, and so there was no need to stay.
Well, yeah, with your arm being twisted a little bit, you basically had to voluntarily resign.
Okay, gotcha. Impressive. So then after that, I understand that several others, to the beat of 230 other employees at the same company, later filed a class action lawsuit. Is that correct?
That's correct. But the government, what they did is they was continuing to look at them charges.
Mm-hmm.
And what they did, they didn't issue no more letters on those charges. They just they passed a bunch of more punitive damages out to a lot of employees. From my understanding, and when they reach a certain number, they stop passing out money because I think they must have asked the company for another lump sum to pass out to different black employees who come forward right then.
Right.
Said they was discriminated against and show a little evidence, and
right.
Then they would just go ahead and offer them so much, you know, the government would. Once they depleted those funds, then the government was through with the case, basically. But the attorney, you know, the attorney who took all the other cases, he decided that since we still have so many other African Americans and and 4 or 5 other companies owned by the same vendor that he was just filed a class action lawsuit against the company as a whole.
Have they resolved that suit?
No, it's ongoing right now.
It's still pending?
It's still pending. It's
wow.
It's a class action that's been actually filed now, so it's pending. They have 230, I didn't believe it's more than 230 because there was 230 on the docket, and since I have helped about 4 or 5 more guys join the case. So, I mean, you know, if they came before assistance, I just guide them how to get on it. And so they have more than 230 some employees still waiting to be relieved.
Mm-hmm. It sounds like, though, and I would, you know, suggest this to anybody who's thinking about doing this. First of all, this ain't for the faint at heart because it wasn't easy. You know, Mr. Cush came out a winner, if you want to call it that, but it wasn't easy. I mean, some of his own fellow employees were afraid to talk to him on the work line because they were fearing that they would get a backlash from just associating with you. But also, this wasn't an easy case because you did manage to do what a lot of people don't do, and that's properly document the case. And then you did have a lot of patience in pursuing it. You just didn't, you know, wake up one morning and decide to do it and expect a result the next day. He was very patient in the way he handled things because you said it typically they respond in 180, but they didn't respond to your complaint for over a year.
That's correct.
Mm-hmm. So is there any other advice before we go into specifics about your specific case that you did that you would pass on to someone else about that I missed? Because it, you know, looks like documentation, you went to the media on it, you showed a lot of patience in the way that you handled it. Was there anything else that you did that I missed?
It's good to have a couple of good solid witnesses if they're working with you in your area and they've been discriminated against. Even if they don't want to join the case at that time,
right.
They can be your witness, and they're protected from the same laws, and the government will contact them and meet a date and just meet with them as well, and they can just stay as regular witnesses if they want until later on in the process. But because you're going to get a lot of backlash from a lot of other employees, and government, city officials, are people going to come out against you? Once you get in the media with it, and they threaten to leave that area, the employer threatens to pull out of that town, then now you have Chamber of Commerce mad at you. You have the City Council mad at you, the mayor. You have the Commissioner's Court. You know, you have the City Council. They're all mad at you. I mean, it's just like it's a war with all of them.
But, Mr. Cush, you also got death threats.
Death threats. We have, you know, the FBI had to come back in. The FBI had to come in anyway, investigate, and get a copy of the package, 36 pages. And then the death threat came through a mail, and it was saying something about listen up, Hen, back off of your necks. And so it had a picture of a black man hanging from a tree in a field, and it had some white kids and some white people standing around grinning and laughing while he was hanging.
And what Mr. Cush told me that was most alarming about this is that the address in which they sent the letter to, they could only have gotten it one way.
Yes, because that address was on my check stub, and I didn't live with that address anymore, but it's the same address that they only have, and I never would let them know where I've relocated it. So that's the only address they use, an old address, and it was that address there that was on my check stub.
And the postmark came out of what city and state?
Came out of Wisconsin, and so I figured somebody either went on vacation or they mailed to one of their relatives and told them to send it back. That's what I think that because the FBI comes in and fingerprint everybody who touched that letter. Like, I trusted it, my sister had trusted it. So they had to fingerprint both of us in order to exclude our fingerprints from that letter. And anyone else who had touched that letter or anything they could find, forensic wise, they were going to investigate to try to find out where that threat came from.
Mm-hmm. Okay. If you just tuned in, you're listening to the all-new KLAC's 98.9 The Talk, bringing you center stage for today's topic, Do I Have a Legitimate EEOC Complaint? We're talking with Mr. Khufu M.G. Cush as he's telling us what we need to know about filing proper EEOC complaints. Do we have a legitimate complaint? And if so, how we need to document it so that we make certain that we are not going to be so that we make certain that we're not going to be dismissed once we file our complaint. What we want to do at this point, I want to open up the phone lines to anybody who has a question or a comment for Mr. Cush. If you would just press 1, or if you're listening via the Internet, dial in at 347-850-8390, and again, press 1. The chat room is down today. I apologize. We had some technical difficulties with opening it up, and we're going to try it again later and see if we're able to get it open, but we were not able. They've been doing some construction around Blog Talk Radio, so we're not certain if that's what happened, but we were not able to open up the chat room. Now, Mr. Cush, one thing that we did talk about is your character when you're filing these EEOC complaints. And you have to be very careful that they are not able to say that you're someone, let's just say, for an example, who has an excessive tardiness record or anything to that effect. I think with your record, they didn't find that, correct?
That's correct. I was the type of employee that I love to work. Because I was the type of employee I like having nice things, and I was working hard to try to get them, you know. So they couldn't keep me out of the plant. They would have to make me take off. They just tell me, well, you just cannot come work the next couple of days. You have to take, you know, some time off. And so they had that charge on me because I was, you know, my work record showed that he worked effectively.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's good. Plus, you know, I got along real well with other employees. That was good. And they didn't have anything on me like insubordination. You know, they didn't have any of that.
So getting along with others, all that can come into question when you're talking about filing EEOC complaints. I mean, because they'll try to build a case against you being the bad guy, right? If I'm understanding correctly.
Yeah, they're going to try everything they can in order to dispute, you know, discredit your character. They're going to try to do everything they can to discredit your character and make all type of allegations that you this and that and stuff. But your work record has to show that you showed up for work, basically, and you wouldn't do overtime. You know, I just did it. That was just me. But at least you had to be sure for 4 hours. And whatnot, if you got along with other employees and whatnot.
So there's workplace, you know, etiquette. A lot of people don't understand that when you go to a job, it's a job. And you don't treat it like it's your home, and you don't get too comfortable there. You should follow whatever the workplace etiquette is, correct?
That's correct. And so, you know, I was really there to learn my job, and I figured I had learned my job enough to get my money. If I had trained a guy who was there, and 8 months later, I'm still working with him, trying to teach him stuff, and he already making $18.22 an hour, and I'm making $14.02. That wasn't going to fly. That made me think that they were doing me like they were going to do the other, like they did other black fella. And like I said, if he hadn't took that, then I don't think they would have tried some of the rest of us.
Let's go to the phone lines. Area code 972-279. Good afternoon. You're on Center Stage.
Yes. I'm having some of the same issues. I noticed that Mr. Cush had said once you, if you question EEOC, they will drop your case. Mm. I have had that issue to happen. It wasn't that I was questioning them. I called to check on the status because they have 6 months to get back with you. And I did not hear anything back. So I called, and the EEOC lady that was handling the case would never call me back. So I spoke with, the regional office, and they told me to file a complaint with her boss, which I didn't want to do that because I knew that it was going to only upset her. Well, I actually had two cases filed with EEOC. And once her boss spoke with her, she did call me back, and a couple of days later, she did give me the right to sue letter. So basically, she said that she did an investigation, but she didn't find anything. I know that she didn't do an investigation because there were some witnesses that was willing to talk, and one of the ladies called me and asked me if EEOC was going to call them. And I said, well, she said she was going to call, and she said, well, she never called me. She said, I want to go ahead and tell what I know before they fire me. That way they won't say that I was a disgruntled employee. That young lady still works there, and today she's still calling me asking me, is anyone going to call her? I was given the right to sue letter, and I did have 90 days, but right now I only have like 50-something days because the company that I'm complaining against, nobody wants to go up against them. Wow. I'm not the one to quit. I mean, I will find someone to represent me within these 40 days because I'm a go-getter. And I feel like if you are being mistreated in the workplace, you should let someone know. There's all kinds of discrimination in the workplace. But once you go to their bosses, you are going to be retaliated against. And that's exactly what I'm going through right now. I was retaliated against. I was fired from this company that I worked for 3 times within a 6-month period.
And so, Mr. Kuska, does she have to have an attorney to pursue it any further? I mean, to go further by herself, or can she do this alone?
She's going to need an attorney, really, because she don't know the proper trial procedures in order to try a case, you know, like that. You know, especially if it's a law
you have to
like
know,
that.
You have to know the different laws and stuff to file, and I do understand what I'm up against. I contacted an attorney, and they told me to fax all of my paperwork to them, that they were familiar with this company that I'm complaining about. They're familiar with the lady from EEOC. They held my paperwork for almost 3 weeks, and then they called me back and told me, well, we can't handle this because we don't represent people in Texas. And I knew that not to be true because they just had handled a case in Texas. So I didn't. I just accepted that, but I'm still not going to quit.
Well, Mr. Kush, how did you go about finding your attorney?
Oh, I had understood that this attorney had came to press essentially 2 or 3 times and had filed suit against the city officials, and he had won every time.
Mm.
And so he had a good reputation for winning cases like that against city officials, really. And so I'm going to ask him to represent this case here, and so I had called the fellow and I kind of talked to him into taking the case. Well, once he said what I had, he said, you have some pictures. I said, I have some photos, all this here and this here and that thing. He said, oh, man, you got some pictures. He said, I tell you what you've already complained about for your ways and discrimination, that ain't nothing like what you got in your file. That you got the, you have the heater heat in your file. He said, bring me them pictures.
Well, I have photos as well. I also have documentation of 2.5 years. Of what they say that they terminated me for, which I have in my possession, because the lady at EEOC never even asked me for anything. I offered to give her these documents that I have that came directly from my supervisors, and she didn't even take a look at them. So she told me she didn't need them. And when I went, she called me back and asked me if I had a picture, and I told her yes, that I did, and she asked me would I bring the picture to her office. I took the picture to her office, and like the next day, may have been 2 days later, that's when she called me back and told me that she was giving me the right to sue letter.
Well, Mr. Kush, should she be someone who's going to the media herself on her particular case?
Should it be someone
if she's not getting
there?
Any results and time is running out, how did you determine that it was time for you to go to the media?
Oh, I went to the media right off because I knew that they was a large employer and that they had a lot of money. And couldn't find I did the best thing because they had the best law firm in the country because of what we was told. And then of course, those lawyers are going to be black. They're not going to be white.
Mm.
So they have black attorneys to fight against discrimination.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one of the things, one of the tricky things. And so I can't see where it helped them. And I think it just helped us out, really. They hired a black attorney because he knew what discrimination is. And all he did was encourage them to settle.
Well, I had an attorney. He was Hispanic, and once he told me when I filed the first case, he wrote them a demand letter telling them they needed to give me my job back. Within 2 days of that demand letter, I had my job back. They let me work 3 months, and they put me on a 90-day probation. I was 13 days shy of completing that probation. And they put me on another, they terminated me again after that 13 days. I filed another grievance. The attorney sent them another letter, and they reinstated me, only to terminate me again 2 months later. I mean, it's just they want to humiliate you so bad to where you just give up. And I'm not giving up. I mean, even if it doesn't work for me, there's other employees there that know that the things that they do are unlawful and they shouldn't get away with it. I don't care how big you are, what the name of your company is, how much money you have. unlawful behavior in the workplace is not tolerated, and you shouldn't just sit back and take that.
Wow. See, my question would be, you know, if they fire you once, I mean, I would be leery of even going back the first time, but if you've gone back twice, you know, it seems like at that point it's all about them humiliating you. So I don't know, Mr. Cush, you didn't go back. You chose because you won your suit. In her situation, because they didn't take it to the point of a suit, I guess all you did was, I guess I'm maybe getting ahead of myself. On your particular situation, you never filed an EEOC complaint against these people, correct? Caller.
Yes, I filed an EEOC complaint. I actually filed two. One complaint was for discrimination. That was the first time that they terminated me. I went back a second time, and because they were still harassing me when I filed the first suit. So I went back, and the guy that I spoke with at EEOC, he said, well, we can't do anything right now. He said, when they terminate you again, then you can come back and file for retaliation. So they fired me again, and then I filed a retaliation suit.
So you never asked for monetary damages?
No.
Okay, so that's the difference in the way you filed your EEOC complaint and the way he filed his EEOC complaint. So would it be better for you just to ask for monetary damages and not ask for your job back?
It wasn't about monetary, because I'd rather have my job than, you know, trying to get rich off of somebody else. I just wanted them to know that what you are doing is unlawful. You shouldn't be treating your employees this way. And once you speak out, then you're doomed, because when I spoke out, I went to their boss, and then I went to their boss. You know, I kept going through chain of command, and only to be told that I suggest you go back downstairs and go to work. I mean, they would speak to you like you were 5 years old. They would use other black women to come to me with different things, and I would tell those women, they're using you to get at me, and the women would be like, they would say, I know. And then I would ask, why are you allowing it? And they wanted to keep their job, so they had to do what they were being told.
But it almost seems like to me that, and this is just me, you know, on the outside looking in, but it almost seems like to me it would be better to sue them, get the money, and go find another job somewhere else so you can have your peace. Because it seems like at some level you're losing your peace when they're, you know, you never know what to expect, you know, from day to day when you come into your job. That doesn't seem like a happy place to work.
Yeah, I mean, I was losing peace because every day I would go to work, if I would come in and I'm smiling and talking to other employees, you know, that they were telling these employees, stay away from her, she's trouble, don't talk to her. When I would come in, you know, they would tell the employees not to talk to me. So it was just like I had the plague. People were trying to stay away from me, but, you know, if they see me at lunch, they talk to me. If they see one of the big people come in, you know, they try to distance themselves. And then I came in one morning, my supervisor pulls me into the office, and she tells me she's going to put in my employee file that she noticed a pattern that I come to work every day with a frown on my face. So one day you tell me when I'm smiling that, oh, stay away from her. The next day you come and tell me you're putting in my employee file that you notice I come with a frown on my face. Well, you don't want me to talk to anybody. So when I am sitting at my desk being quiet, then you have a problem. So I didn't know what I could do and when I could do it.
So that just doesn't seem like it. You know, I mean, I don't know what that job pays, but it could not be enough to allow them to treat you like that, because that's got to disturb you on so many levels, because you're worried about how they're going to rate your job performance, how you behave. Everything is up, you know, for question. I just really can't see that that's the smart way to go. I would think sue them, get the money like Mr. Cush did, and go find an employer that can appreciate you for the work you do.
Mm-hmm. Well, I tried. I tried to work with them. I mean, I tried to, because when I went to work, they never had any problems out of me talking back. You know, everything they asked me to do, I did. I tried to go above and beyond of what they expected of me. But it's only when you start speaking out, when you let them know that you're not going to take this, that it's unlawful, you can't do this to me, then they're going to try something else. And they're going to use other people to get at you. I had other supervisors coming to me telling me, you know, they need to leave you alone. And I'm like, well, you all need to speak up. You all are seeing it being done, and you allow it. And there's a lot of women there now that's afraid to talk because they are afraid of losing their jobs. But nothing is going to change until they start speaking out about this place. They have been sued several times for this.
Mr. Cush, what would you recommend her to do?
Well, since her charge has been given a right to sue letter, she can't do anything but get an attorney and try to save the case. Doesn't mean she's lost the case. But if a lawyer picks the case up and see that it has merits, which I think her case probably had merits, but when she asked for the right to sue letter after 6 months, because we was very anxious like she was, you know, I was
really I didn't ask for the right to sue. I called and asked to check on the status. Because I hadn't heard from her. They tell you that it takes 6 months. They have to respond to you within 6 months. Okay, I went back in May of 2010. I hadn't heard anything in February, so I called her and I asked her, you know, I wanted to ask her about the case. Well, she would never return my calls. So I spoke to another lady at EEOC, and she's like, I don't know why she's avoiding you. She shouldn't be doing that. Let me give you her supervisor's name. And I was like, oh, no, I don't want to do that. I don't want to make her mad. And she was like, no, you need to call her and let her know that she's not responding to you, she said, because we have to respond to, you know, with you calling in. So when I talked to her, it was during the holidays, and in February she called me. She's like, I understand you've been trying to contact me. Well, I had left her probably like 5 or 6 messages. She never called me back. So, and I was like, yes. She's like, well, what is it that I can help you with? I said, I was just basically checking on the status of my first complaint. And she was like, well, I hadn't had time to review it. Just give me a couple of days, and I'll review it. And I'm like, okay, you had 6 months. I didn't say that to her, but I'm saying you had 6 months, and you never called any of the people I gave you to contact. And now I filed my second complaint, and she immediately kicks the second one out without even calling anybody. I guess the only information she got was the information from Dallas County. I won't tell you who it was, but I guess that's the only information she got was from who it was that I was complaining on.
Wow. You know what? I don't know if there's an answer to this because, you know, you have to decide for yourself, but I really just don't see that anything other than suing them and going public and putting it out there is going to be fair for you, because I think going back to work for them is just not going to be smart for you, because I think on some level, if it's all about them humiliating you, I think they'll rehire you and fire you again.
Oh, well, I'm pretty sure that they would. I mean, because when they fired me the first time, I knew it was about humiliation, because on the day of my grievance, when I filed my grievance, they had a detective. They brought a detective in, and he was basically accusing me of doing some organized crime with a young man that had stole some things.
Wow.
And they were basically pressuring me, trying to get me to say that I did it, you know, and I kept saying, I did not do it. I said, there's many things you can call me, but a thief is not one. And he was just, if you did it for monetary gain, you need to let me know. And I just told the people from the company that I was working for, how dare you bring this guy in here on the day that I'm fighting to get my job back? You know, you're bringing someone in here, accuse me, and their answer to me was, he would have got you at home. I said, then he'd have been on my terms, not with me trying to get my job back. And so I immediately ended the conversation. I told him that I was contacting my attorney. So I pushed away from the table, and I started dialing my attorney's number. The gentleman immediately jumped up from the table. He knew that he wasn't going to question me anymore. And he stood there while I called the attorney. The attorney was like, well, you can talk to them. He said, you have the right to terminate it at any time. He said, if they're saying something that you don't like, terminate it and walk out. So I did that. I got ready to get up from the table to walk out. I told him that I was done. One of the ladies yelled, oh, Miss Lyons, please don't leave. Please don't leave. And I'm like, okay, why? She said, because we're going to offer you your job back.
You know, that mind game stuff, I don't know that I would want to work for an employer who would do that. You know, I mean, so you send someone in to intimidate me and accuse me of being a thief, but then you turn around 5 seconds later when I'm walking out to tell me that I have my job back. That just doesn't sound like a great place to work.
Yeah, so that's what they did to me.
Can I say something like quick?
Yes, sir.
Now, she's going to need an attorney now to file the charge. and he come back and investigate and amend the charge, upgrade or whatever. But had she got an attorney for she filed the EOC charge, then she would have been playing the court right along for looking at everything she has, her witness and everything. She would have been traveling back and forth, gathering those witnesses and investigating, and he would have been back and forth in contact with the EOC. A lot of times it's good for her attorney because they have already dealt with the EOC several times in different cases. And in the case that I had, these attorneys had already dealt with the EOC.
Well, this attorney has dealt with them as well. He is the attorney that I had in place. He dealt with them as well. But once he told me when they fire you again, he said, then you can get them for retaliation. I'm like, okay. And he said, once you file, he said, come back to me, and then I'll go and file it in court. So then when I called him, he was like, okay, you can come back to me. He said, but I'm going to need $10,000 up front.
Wow. Oh, my God.
How much you want to need up front?
He wanted $10,000 up front. And he started telling me, he started breaking it down on what he needed it for. Well, I need $2,800 just to go in and file this charge. And I'm like, okay. And then I knew then, okay, I'm giving you $500 every WAP just for you to write a demand letter when I can write a demand letter. And then you tell me, basically, I felt like I was misled.
Wow.
And then when I got all the information that he needed, because he also has the documents that I have. He has my evaluations and everything from my employer. And he was saying, you have a case against him. You have a case. And then once I bring all that documentation to him again, and that's when he says, I need $10,000. So I'm like, okay.
Wow. I don't know about that one. I mean, it sounds like he's not too sure about the case if he's
exactly
up front. So that doesn't sound like the right attorney. Because you want somebody that at least has enough confidence in the case that they feel like they can get theirs on the back end, I would think.
That's correct.
I don't know. Is that what happened with you, Mr. Kusher? They get theirs on the back end or they get it on the front end?
If I don't get nothing, they don't get nothing.
Okay, that's what I'm talking about. So it sounds like wrong attorney.
Now, I will say this here, though, when you cross into six figures at the compensatory and punitive damage, when you go into six figures a couple times and then you instead of going up in number, well, you don't have a choice on your job. They're going to ask for your job.
Okay.
So that's basically it. It ain't like, because I would love that I went back to work and they paid me my regular pay and then had already recovered some compensatory and punitive damages, you know. But that wasn't the case. They want your job. They're going to put that on the table. We'll do this here. After we cross this next number here, we're going to want the job.
Well, that's what he was asking me, if I wanted my job back. And I was like, well, yeah, you know. I would prefer to have my job because, I mean, it makes it hard for you when you go out and you've sued someone. It makes it hard for you when you go out to another to find other employment, and then they have to call that last employer. They're not supposed to give you negative references, but who's to say you might get somebody that day that don't care? I mean, it would make it hard for you to find a job. So
okay,
I would have
that, you know what, and that just shows y'all that this thing could go either way. It's not just the slam dunk case. You really got to be on top
exactly
of it, because it seems like to me EEOC jumps on those that they are certain that they can win, and if they're not, they do in a situation like what they're doing to this young lady, and they're kind of giving her, you know, kind of gave her the runaround, and then you know, just gave her a right to sue letter. So I think the key is document, and be prepared to be ostracized and everything else, and even eventually maybe you have to quit. Thank you, caller. Mr. Kufu, let's go back over some of these things that we have to know about. Okay, we discussed the fact no excessive tardiness, no abusing sick time. You need to get along with other people, because if you file these suits, they're going to bring your character into question. They're going to use everything they got by the kitchen sink against you, if I'm understanding you correctly, Mr. Kush.
That's correct. But now, if they have essentially written you up, then I would suggest you use that as a, you know, flip side. Say, well, they write me up because, you know, I've been complaining about my raise, and they want to write me up until they get me out of here. So I will flip the game on them like that, you know, because I had to do that. But they'll write me up, and so they backed off writing you up, period. They don't care what you do. They're not going to write you up. That's why when they get you at the conciliatory process and you cross into those certain numbers, they don't want to look at you. It's not the fact that you won't continue to work there. It's the fact that they won't buy their piece back. They don't want to look at you anymore. You've been in the media on them. Everybody's teaming around. Your plant's upset and everything. The public officials upset. We don't want to see this guy no more. So,
okay, we're down to the last 30 minutes, y'all. If you just tuned in, you're listening to the all-new KLHD's 98.9 The Talk, bringing you center stage for today's topic, Do I Have a Legitimate EEOC Complaint? We're talking with Mr. Khufu M.G. Kush. If you got questions about whether or not you've been discriminated against in the workplace, I think today's the day to ask the question and let Mr. Kush set the record straight. Another thing, we want to remind everyone, Mr. Kush, you said never quit. No matter how tough it gets, don't let them make you quit.
No, you don't want to quit a job in the middle of a charge like that, and you don't want to get fired. If you won't get fired, let it be retaliation. I mean, just because you just not use anything on them if they fire you. But you don't want to just get fired for, say, bad, the UA or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Unless they find that the whole company violated all the black employees' rights, mm-hmm. then if you leave on like a, you know, people have marijuana, it's just some type of thing, then the charge is going to be kind of flaking there. They're going to get, you know, dismissed. But if they find out that the company violated the law, I mean, they violated all black people's laws, I mean, rights and whatnot. And so you just got to get fired. I think people get fired for everything. Then they still receive compensation and punitive damages. It didn't matter how they left. The fact was, while they were there, their civil rights were violated in every kind of way. So it didn't matter how they got fired. We see a lot of tenants after that. We've seen people that still receive compensation and damages. We've seen people who got fired for sleeping in the crane, you know, and they throw something up at the fella, and he's about to kill someone up there. He got fired, and he still received compensatory damage. And then the fella got marijuana in the system. But the company was already considered violating civil rights laws.
Mm-hmm.
So once they violated civil rights laws, you had a right to a claim at that time. You can leave, though, however you want to leave in. But so that's the way it is. That's the way they looked at it. That was kind of interesting because people was getting fired for stuff that was trifling matters. You know, and some of the things they may have brought themselves, but going to EOC, their rights were violated under the Civil Rights Act of Title VII. And so they still had to compensate them.
Okay, and you said, too, though, you know, I think you mentioned it earlier about insubordination. No matter what they're doing to you, don't let them push you into a corner where you say some things that you know will be ruled against you as being insubordinate, correct?
That is correct, but, you know, like you have a case like this lady you had, and they might just issue a right to sue letter,
mm-hmm.
then it's best that you stay out of the way because they're going to try that on you. But if they find that company violated the law for it with all their black employees, even the ones that have made any claims, then blacks have a kind of like the balls in their court.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't know if it's considered as wrong on behalf of the employer, but the balls is in the blacks' court when the government rules that they violate civil rights law. So,
okay, and someone, women in what? I didn't hear that.
When
last.
They violate civil rights law.
Okay, let me ask you this: When everybody says documentation beats conversation, what are you documenting for somebody who may think they have something or may see something that they know is not right? How do they go about documenting? What are you doing? You putting dates, time, places, what? What all are you documenting?
I would write, me personally, I wrote about the overall situation in that facility, and I hit different areas of that facility. And stuff that I knew in those areas to be true and talk with employees. I wrote about every area in that facility to show that this was not just in my area. This was the plant-wide, and they're doing these things. And so trying to give them an overall picture of the situation in order to show them, trying to get them violated. You know,
you're documenting something, I would think you need the date, the time, the place, who all was around, you know, anything that may narrow it down to they cannot deny that this happened.
Oh, well, of course, yes, of course. You know, when you initial charge and file a charge, you have to have dates not time, but dates and people's name and people you think would have discriminated against you and other people you think believe that they received more favoritism than you or less favoritism than you, this type of stuff here. So, yes, you have to have that. paste anything, documentation possible.
Okay, so a lot of companies have protocol. So if you have a complaint initially, do you have to take the complaint to your supervisor and then your supervisor's supervisor in that proper chain of command before you actually go to the EEOC, or can you take your complaint straight to the EEOC and skip the supervisor?
You can take it to your supervisor, but it's best to take it to corporate. Their corporate office file with the corporate first and see what corporate says about it, because the corporate going to come down to human resources and get human resources going to come down on supervisor. Well, you know, if they dismiss it that, you know, it's not legitimate or it's frivolous, then you take it to the EEOC. I think this lady here had a good check case with the EEOC.
Right.
I think that because they had her case 6 months, that means that they were looking at her case. I mean, they weren't sitting on that joke 6 months. Because I've seen them dismiss people's cases in 1 month.
So you think she, okay, and she's still online. Do you think that what she did was she are you saying that she, in calling them just to check on the case, she hurt herself? Because if they held it for 6 months, they just drop it
out. It might not should have been that way, but that lady who she was investigating the case for call, I think she was getting pressured into giving some type of solution to the problem right then, when that's not right, it's because the EEOC held and sued themselves by different individuals and whatnot. And so the lady who she was dealing with may have felt that she was being pushed to give a ruling. And if you call a supervisor and file a complaint with a supervisor, then it probably came downhill on her. And she thought it was yesterday, right, to sue them to get herself out of it.
Okay, let me
ask you something. But they had a case
6 months. Go ahead.
But they had a case of 6 months, and that was pretty good, because that means they were looking at that. She must have a lot of documentation they were going over.
Okay, one thing you said, and I don't know if you need to clarify this or not, but you need to clarify it for me. If I don't know if everybody else got it. When you said filing the grievance, you said take it straight to corporate. Everywhere I've ever worked, if you skip over your supervisors and go over their head to do anything, especially going to corporate,
mm-hmm.
you're going to get a backlash just for doing that.
Yes.
So are you certain that you don't take it to your supervisor and say, I got a problem, before you skip all the way to corporate?
Well, I'm already been on deal with my supervisor, because they're the one who's telling me this way. So I've already had a talk with them about my raises, and so since they don't want to comply, and they're making threats about, you know, on my fire and stuff, you need to be fired, this type of, so I'm going to take it to corporate.
Okay, I'm sorry. That's...
And deal what happened.
Okay.
And I try to ask for a raise with my supervisor, and we've been having problems with whatnot, and so sometimes they say, well, see, you can't skip over human resources and go to corporate. Sometimes they say you need to go to human resources, but you don't have to go to human resources. You can't go to corporate. So they know that company and human resources need supervisors. They all know one another. So I skipped over to human resources and went right to corporate with it.
Okay.
I already talked with my supervisor. So that's like, and so once corporate got a hold to it, then they investigated it down the ladder, because it's still the same thing. It's in that company. You have to make the company aware of the charge. I mean, aware of the situation, basically. It don't matter if it's really supervisor. Because, see, you might want to say something anonymous that's going
mm-hmm.
on. You know, you might want to be anonymous.
Mm-hmm.
And so the company will investigate it. And so at that time, if you're anonymous, you don't want human resources to know who you are. You don't want the supervisor to know who you are. And so you go to corporate with it. But if you don't mind being knowing who you are, then you just, you know, you can either way, you can do it either way. As long as the company is made aware on one level or another, like the supervisors, you can go back to the EEOC.
You
so,
said
you know,
something
you
earlier
that.
About that your employer had 600 white employees and 100 black employees. That said, how do you know what the ratio should be? I mean, because that happens in a lot of places across the country where we see a whole lot more of one race than we do another race. I mean, so how do you know when that ratio is off?
Well, just think about it. Blacks don't know when the ratio is off. I mean, as far as what ratio they put, what quotas they're supposed to use. I mean, you see a black coming every now and then, you know, you think they complying with quotas laws because they don't hire them more than the quotas. They still hire them. My thing was, if they were still hired by the quotas, and they still are racist to me. And so that's the way I pushed it. If they still hired, if you have 600 white employees, 100 black, that's not even a quotas to me. So there's no way we can say 600 to 1 is a quota. So you can't look at that. I mean, it's not logical to say that that's a quota.
But are they I mean, is there some law that says that they have to have a certain ratio of blacks versus whites in their workplace? Or because if that's the case, there's a whole bunch of companies not doing the right thing. So is there somewhere it's written that they have to?
Well, we used to have a civil rights law, like the 1964 Civil Rights Act, and it's all in there. And so
okay.
You have to know the law in order to know what codes they have. But now, in order to bring a shortage against an employer, they must have 15 to 100 employees. Don't you don't have a choice. If they have 14 employees, 13 employees, and you only black, you claim discrimination, you don't have a choice because it's not 15 employees or more. You have to have at least 15 employees or more in order to have a choice of discrimination.
Okay.
And they
so
also measure
your
monetary damages based on how many employees the company has.
Gotcha.
I mean, you know, there's a limit on George Bushman put a limit on your settlement in Texas. And the sky's the limit in other states, but there's a limit on compensatory and punitive damages in Texas.
Okay.
Because of joint compensatory.
Let's go over how do you build this case. So I'm working at this job, and I really don't feel like they're doing me right because, like you say, I got 600 white people working here, and there's only 100 of us black people over here, and I see things like what you're seeing. The first step you did was what? You start documenting.
Mm-hmm.
I started
documenting my situation first.
Okay. So at what point did you take it to the supervisor, or did you completely skip over the supervisor and say, I'm going to corporate with it?
Well, I didn't tell him anything. After he threatened to take my job several times, everything asked for a raise.
So you have been threatened just because you asked for a raise. So you felt like there was no need to deal with that supervisor at all, so you went straight to corporate with a complaint. Mr. Cush. I'm sorry, our boards have frozen again. Mr. Cush just dropped off. We're going to have to wait for him to dial back in. If you just tuned in, you're listening to the all-new KLHD's 98.9 The Talk, bringing you center stage for today's topic, Do I Have a Legitimate EEOC Complaint? We're speaking with Mr. Khufu, M.G. Cush, and he's telling us about how he himself filed an EEOC complaint successfully, and he's telling us the steps that we need to follow in order to do the same if we are experiencing discrimination in the workplace. Mr. Cush, are you back with us?
Yes.
Okay. And
there is a question.
You documented, and you didn't feel a need to talk to your supervisor because you had problems with them every time you mentioned the word race, and so went straight to corporate with your complaint?
I went straight to corporate because
straight
human resources, you have to understand, it's all white in human resources. There's no blacks up there. They're not trying to hear that. She's the one that's hiring all these whites versus blacks, and the race is going through them, so... No, they're not trying to hear that. They're all in one glove, so you might file with corporate against them.
Okay.
And so
you go to corporate, and so does corporate say, well, you didn't follow the proper chain of command, or do they immediately take your complaint seriously?
They didn't say that you didn't follow the proper chain of command. They just investigate and get on the human resource manager and ask questions, and then they come on down here. They're going to ask the supervisor what's going on with the situation. But later we had that was investigating from corporate. She was not fair, and the government said she wasn't fair, and they wanted her out. So they had to remove her from that job. They had to remove the human resource director at the plant from her position. Because I also stated that we could not resolve the issue with her being the human resource manager because we had future generations of black youth that was going to be coming to the plant and would not want to leave our future, our kids, into the hands of a racist or a biased human resource manager. So that she had to go.
Okay.
She's there, but she's no longer the head in human resource. Now she don't have the right to hire anymore. They took that out of her hand.
Okay. So let me ask you this, because we're running out of time. When you're dealing with these complaints, and the young lady mentioned earlier about having witnesses. Now, I know most of the places I've ever worked, if you ask the person, can they go tell somebody what they just saw happen to you, most folks start backing up.
Mm-hmm.
They're like, listen, I would help you.
Got
a family at home. So at what point do you ask somebody to jeopardize their job to help you with your complaint?
Well, they have to be feeling some of the heat to themselves. They're more likely they're not going to do it.
Okay, you say what? Okay, the boards are freezing again. We apologize. If you just tuned in, you're listening to the all-new KLAC's 98.9 The Talk, bringing you center stage for today's topic, Do I Have a Legitimate EEOC Complaint? We're speaking with Mr. Khufu M.G. Kush, who, for whatever reason, never keeps dropping off the board. I apologize. The boards keep freezing today. Mr. Kush, are you back with us?
Yes, I am.
Okay, I don't know what's happening. The boards keep freezing. Every time it freezes, it drops you off. Okay, so I was just asking you, most places I've ever worked, if you ask somebody to stand with you when they know you've been wrong, most people start backing up and they say, you know, I have a family or I have, you know, a house known or this, that, or the other. So I would, but, you know, I don't want to lose my job. So how do you find people who are willing to stand up for you in situations like these?
It's very hard, I'm telling you. People have to really have suffered something themselves, and they have to just trust your judgment on, hey, you know, we have enough evidence to show that they're violating the law. And even that, sometimes, people just do not want to file. They're scared to file just their employer. And EOC won't need things. And so a lot of times to me, it seemed to me like they was really admiring the employees for standing up, because they know people will not stand up for it. People are scared to stand up against their employer. They're worried about repercussions, you know. And so I was blessed to have found a few fellows who was willing to stay with me and not sell me out, because one of the tactics was going to be, according to a word in the print, was that they were first going to the lawyers and the company, going to try and get the guy back there who was with me to try to turn against me.
Mm-hmm.
And so that didn't happen. So they said, okay, we have a problem then. We can't get his immediate group back there to turn against him. We can't divide them up, so that's going to be a problem. You know, they're saying the same thing, and so that's you need a couple good people with you. But now, if you have a case like I had, I'd always decide that I had enough evidence I thought in order to bring about a case that could really stand on its own. Because anytime you have that type of hardcore graffiti, and racist symbols and writings and nuisance in a company. Then you have 6-1, and then no blacks in the front office, no black supervisor on the floor. That's pretty much, you get a case that can, you know, they can work itself. All the abuse is difficult. Even with the government looking at it, I don't see them denying the charge.
Okay. Let's go here. Because we want people to understand the whole picture of how to stay out of trouble, you know, in the workplace. When you get an evaluation, you said, you know, you're getting these evaluations and you're not getting raises. But when you're getting an evaluation on your job and you don't agree with it, they're not giving you a raise or they're saying things on there that you disagree with, do you sign these evaluations or don't you sign these evaluations?
Well, I have signed some of them and some of them I have not. And they made threats, if you don't sign it, such and such, what's not going to follow you up there, because I'll let you make it a couple of times, and that'll be the case. You have, my thing was this year, we had white employees that couldn't even do the job. They changed his job 3 times. If he ain't fought him, they ain't threatened to fight him. I can do my job. You got me to do my job. I can do the job. You already going to demote me. And so my thing is that if you have demoted old Jim Glow over there, and you don't have him on two jobs, the top side is 20-50 hours, and there was no way you could try to make me sign a thing saying that my evaluation was bad. Mm-hmm. Or if so, you're not going to stop my money for my raises, because you still give him his raises. And so it was just a situation. It was a tough situation. I guess it's case-by-case basis. You just have to play it out. But I would never make it. For me, I would document things and date and time. People don't believe that. They don't understand the power of documentation. Mm-hmm. Once you put it on paper, because a lot of people say, okay, I'm going to document some things, then they forget to document this, they forget to document that. But if they document it, they go back a year later and read all their documentation, man, I almost forgot that. That's real good there. So it's good to have a little pen with some a little paper thing on you and document some things for future reference, because the government's going to need to get a working knowledge of what's going on. You got to really sell your mindset to the government and to the attorneys that you're trying to hire, because they don't know what's going on. The government don't know what's going on. You're going to have to really, you know, make them feel, well, you know, what you feel.
Okay, so I understand all that you have a right to know everything that's in your file.
Mm-hmm.
The company's not going to give you that. They're not going to give you. The company's going to give you that. So it's best to just document the write-ups. Well, as a matter of fact, this company wouldn't give you a copy of the write-up. This first company I worked for would not give you a copy of your write-up. Anywhere else I worked at, you could get a copy of the write-up.
Mm-hmm.
Once you sign the write-up, you get a copy of it. But these people here refused to give you a copy of the write-up. And so I documented when they wrote me up and the date and time and these sort of things here.
Okay. And
so,
you said never would...
Once I documented, they couldn't deny that they didn't give it to me because the government going to come in and answer that document. And
but
anytime
they
reference.
Give you any form to sign, don't you have a right to a copy of it?
Yep.
That's what I told them. But they said, no, you don't get no copy. It goes into your files. And you can't, you can have a copy of anything you sign, man.
Mm-hmm.
No, you can't get no copy. Y'all, they went to human resources with the same complaint. No, you can't have a copy of it. So that was, to me, that was part of the, you know, the trick they were using, too, you know, to keep you from ever even being, how they think you're not going to file. They think you're not going to document it on paper. So by not giving you a copy of it, I guess that would just make you say, okay, I don't have a power to do anything about the situation, so I just forget it.
Okay, now the caller brought up a good point. When you file these EEOC complaints, and if you win or lose, is that going to hinder you from finding a job in the future? Is that going to follow you?
Of course.
I think that it can. There are people cussing behind everything, especially if you do it like I did with the city officials, everybody out there. Because, you know, now if you do it quietly, it may not affect you that way. But my situation, I think it affects, you know, it would affect me that way if I tried to apply for a job because there's so much risk in this time, then everybody come out against you. But the company does write you a letter, a recommendation, saying you left the company on good standing, you're a good, productive employee, blah, blah. And so you can take that and use that for a reference.
Mm-hmm.
And when you go for employment, they give you unemployment, right? The company is not going to deny you unemployment, as far as you agree with. And they'll tell you, just say that it was a separation of four due to lack of work, meaning that you was just laid off. And so when they call the employee to come and say that, no, he didn't do anything, you know, that was on the call for him to leave the company, the company had a layoff, he was laid off. And so that's when they filed the unemployment, and they pay the unemployment as well.
And the person is able to go on and get another job, and this is not going to follow them.
Well, I mean, I'm saying it can. I'm not saying it won't because you have those dirty human resources when they call for a reference.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, you sued us, you've been out, you know, white people gonna stay white. You know, they gonna iron closed door, they gonna tell everything they can tell on you one another. So we know that you got to hope that you can me personally, I wouldn't put them down for a reference, but these days look like anytime another employer pull your name up with your social security number, it's like that last employer pops up anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So it's kind of hard to say that you didn't work for a previous company when they got all this new computer stuff that pops you up somewhere you used to work at anyway.
Another thing I want to mention is when you're collecting all this information and documentation, who can you trust? You can't tell your fellow employee, even though they may be your buddy on the job, you don't want to share with everyone what you're doing. I would think when you're trying to do something like this, when you're in the midst of trying to put together an EEOC complaint, you wouldn't tell everybody about what you're doing, correct?
That's correct.
No, you would not. No. Hey, you're out there blinking eye. The package that you write out, you just keep it to yourself and the lawyer, the EEOC, and the company lawyers will get that. Now, if you want to brief your main witnesses, if you see you have a solid couple of witnesses with you who's not going to fold up like I did, of course, I'll share the package with them so they'll, you know what's going on. And that was that, you know, that helped me out. That did, because they're my witnesses. And basically, I already knew. I'm just brushing them up on things. But if I had, I couldn't trust everybody. Like, I wouldn't dare trust them. People say, well, I'm going to be with you now. Oh, no, I'm not going to. No, you got to go. I'm not going to do that. Don't do that. So I'll just sell you out. And the black guy, you know how we know black people, we don't tell one another out there. That's a known fact. They get scared. And I had black guys, matter of fact, the black guy was the one here to rally against me, not the white guy. They sold it to the blacks. They're going to lose their job, choose the job they had out there. When the really the whites, like I told the commissioners, of course, if they tell me shutting the company down, then who do you think will hurt the most, blacks or whites? It's 600 whites and 100 blacks. And you think, I mean, blacks used to be without a chance. You know, we can always make do. But the whites will make that type of money. Most of them are making the $20, $50 an hour anyway. The blacks are only making that top not $13.75. That's what I put in the package of being the black top out pay out there. You know, the white human resources in the supermarket wouldn't let blacks get over $13.75 in all times, in most cases. And so we're not going to be the ones that go, well, I'm going to throw trash off the back of a trash truck and get that again. So, I mean, they're going to shut the plant down, leave town, shut it down. Or get, you know, or get in line with the civil rights laws.
And you got in trouble for that because a lot of the leaders in your town felt like you were running out this company that was employing 750 workers. So, therefore, they just wanted you to hush because they felt overall you were hurting everybody and being selfish in filing that suit, correct?
That's correct. But I told them what we had to do is that we had to reinforce the law because we had future generations of blacks coming out there. Our kids, we want to make sure that they had received fair pay. And so we're going to have to take a stand now, and we might have to take a backlash, you know, but other companies would know in the area that you don't come to this area, you're violating civil rights law. Because we don't want to make an impact, you know, where we are at times and stuff. And so my thing was this year, the blacks run around with their head cut off and holding their rags against me when they're not going to be the ones that made them lose anyway. They're going to be the whites who are going to be running, should be doing this year. But they know that once blacks, you know, blacks easily manipulated. And so they use the blacks. I said they just use them. I mean, the ones that are making $20 an hour, they the ones that came out on me. It was like, it wasn't even, we only have 8 or 10 in the plant out of that 100 that's making $20.50. And so that 4 or 5 that was making $20.50 or close to it, they come out on me.
Really?
That was ridiculous.
Several things we want to leave with the people. We want to leave with the fact that you never quit and you try not to get fired.
Exactly.
That's correct. Try not to get fired. Never quit and try not to get fired while the process is going on.
We say documentation beats conversation. So document. And then you said on the EEOC complaint that they should never withdraw it. You know, be patient no matter how long it takes, because the longer they're taking to give you an answer back probably indicates that they see a case.
Mm-hmm.
That indicates that they just not going to probably say that employer violated the law because they dismiss a charge quick. You know, I mean, they go over pretty fast, they dismiss a charge quick. And so if they have your case like that 4 or 5, 6 months, they really look into a case. You have to give them a little more time. Like I said, you know, it took a year for them to rule on ours and stuff. And plus, we had attorneys going back and forth with them and going on different procedures. Then we still gathered other evidence that was in our favor. And so, but it's best to let them just don't answer no letter. Don't sweat about it. Just let them do. They're going to issue something for long.
Okay, Mr. Cooper, is there any final comments you want to leave with the folks about filing EEOC complaints?
Is there anything I want to leave with the people?
Yeah. We're down to our last 4 minutes segment.
Well, you know, basically, you know, Women's Fund and Problem Discrimination is that whenever the employer, whenever discrimination is found, the goal of the law is to put the victim of discrimination in the same position or nearly the same that he or she would have been if discrimination had never occurred. And the types of relief would depend upon the discriminatory action and the effect it had on the victim. For example, if someone is not selected for a job or a promotion because of discrimination, the remedy may include placement in the job and or back pay and benefit the person would have received. So the employer will also be required to stop any discriminatory practices and take steps to prevent discrimination in the future.
Mm-hmm. So it is your contention that anybody who feels like they're being discriminated against, they should pursue an EEOC complaint, but only if they're not the faint at heart, because it's not easy.
Mm-hmm.
It's not easy, and you need to, if there's anything for us, pictures and whatnot that you can obtain in the print, voice recordings. I mean, you know, it's hard to get voice recording on people, but you can. But pictures, you know, is very valuable. If they know, because it's so hard to prove discrimination. I mean, they get out of there. Look at how many times they get out of there. You know, the EEOC said they have, 97,000 cases a year. They only help litigate 250 and 325, this type of stuff. That's a small fraction. So you have to have some real solid evidence. If you're going to bring a charge, you have to have well documented. You got to be ready to fight it. And like I said, if you stay in contact with the EEOC through your attorneys, who have probably dealt with the EEOC before, you probably have a better result.
Wow, that's going to have to be.
And if you take the charge, in person. Take the charge in person. I'll tell people, take the charge in person so you can sit down with the intake officer so you can work out your case. If you mail it in certified, it's okay, but it's not the same effect. I don't think so.
Okay. That's going to have to be the final word. We want to thank Mr. Khufu N.G. Kush for being our guest today. I learned so much about EEOC complaints. Have to file one, and we'd like to remind you that the views and opinions of our guests do not necessarily reflect that of Center Stage or the host. Also, a reminder, April 16, 2011, from 3 to 4 p.m., Jordan Maxwell will be back with us for part two. He's an expert on subjects like the Illuminati, the New World Order, the Vatican, and secret societies, a must-hear show. And also, follow me on Facebook and follow me under Twitter. I'm under Carrie Hines. The clock on the wall says we got to get out of here, y'all. Thank you so much for tuning in. Again, thank you to Mr. Khufu N.G. Kush for being my guest, and to you all for listening. See you next time. Bye-bye.